and welcome to the Functional Nerds. This is episode number 26. I think people think that I don't actually remember, or that I'm playing a game like I do remember, but I actually don't. I always have to look at my notes. Anyway, I'm Patrick Hester, and I'm an author, a blogger, a podcaster, and an all-around functional nerd. And I'm joined tonight by my partner in crime, Mr. John Anilio.
Hey, I'm John. I write songs about science fiction and fantasy and other nerdy things. You can get a lot of my music. You can pay what you want for my music, including free, over at johnanilio.bandcamp.com, and you can follow me at twitter.com/johnanilio.
But before you do that, I need to ask you a question real quick. Can you get me any signed Wesley Crusher paraphernalia?
No, I can't. We could talk about it. Maybe we'll talk about that later. And Patrick is referring to the fact that, like, my song has gotten to the Clash of the Geeks thing that's out. And we'll talk more about that later. But
okay.
Needless to say, I haven't actually spoken to Will Wheaton, or him and I are not, like, best buds now. I wouldn't mind, but, you know, he's a popular guy that I had no contact with. So, anyway. Tonight, we have two great guests. We have... in the science fiction and fantasy community. And we have Kate Baker and Matthew Kressel. Say hello.
Hello.
Okay, hello. Kate, why don't you go first? Tell us a little bit about what you do and what you have going on, and then we'll talk about Matt a little bit.
Oh, snap. Hey. Just shot Matt right down. That was cold.
Yeah. Well, hey, I can take it. I'm a tough guy.
Yeah.
I've met him. He is tough.
Meanwhile, my microphone's falling apart, so if you hear weird clicking noises, it's me trying to adjust it. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Kate.
All right. Well, first of all, I am a dysfunctional nerd. I've got way too many things going on. First and foremost, though, in the science fiction community, I am known as the podcast director for Clarksworld Magazine. I started podcasting about 5-6 years ago. I started reading short stories of a friend, and then it just sort of evolved into this most recent position, which I absolutely love because we won a Hugo. Yay!
Yay!
And on top of that, I'm a mom. I'm going to school. I've got a full-time job and, you know, all that other craziness that goes on with life. So you can find me at katebaker.net.
Awesome.
Great. And Kate actually is a writer as well. And
oh, yeah. Well, I forgot to mention that, right?
Yeah. And one of her short stories appears in Sybil's Garage, which is a project by our other guest, Matthew Kressel.
Hi, my name's Matt Kressel. And am I a functional nerd? Depends on your definition of functional.
Can you function in society?
It depends on who you ask. My CV is basically I'm a writer, editor, and publisher. Obviously, I published Sybil's Garage. What?
Are you British?
I am not.
Why do you ask? Then why'd you say CV? Over here we say
my resume.
Resume.
What you can call it whatever you wish. So it's in its seventh issue, and we also our press, Census 5 Press, published Paper Cities, which last year won the World Fantasy Award. Yay!
Very cool.
And so I edit, obviously, too. I edited Sybil's Garage, and with help of a bunch of other people, but I'm the editor-in-chief. And I write as well. I've had stories in Clark's World, which Kate narrated one of them on
Yay!
Their podcast, which was amazing, gave me chills. And I got a story coming out in Beneath Ceaseless Skies and Naked City, which is an anthology edited by Ellen Datlow, and a couple other places. That's my story.
And you're a full-time IT guru?
Yeah, that's what I do during the day. I basically support small businesses who basically they can't afford their own IT staff, so they call me part-time to come in. Hey, our computer blew up. Can you come in and put out the fire? So that's pretty much what I do during the day. And what's nice about that is it allows me time to do all this other stuff. So
sure. Oh,
it's
yeah.
Pretty flexible.
That sounds like a really awesome job.
It can be. It can also be kind of crazy at times. It's like hot and cold like any freelance business, but it can be fun.
I one of my many, 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 many hats is webmaster. And yep. Someone was using a third party website thing and they wanted a link on their page. And so I put it on their page for them. And then the link stopped working because the third party software screwed up and they got an email from it that said, you know, contact support. And so they call me.
Nice.
And I'm like, you do realize that they wanted you to call their support. Well, that's what I'm doing. You support me.
You know, Patrick, that before we get, Matt, I have a couple questions I want to ask you, but I just want to get off track for a minute here. Patrick, you talk about IT. I was listening to there's a podcast called the CD Baby DIY Musicians Podcast, which CD Baby is a company that most musicians have their CDs out to buy, and it gets your stuff into iTunes. But the guys that do the podcast worked as IT for CD Baby for years, and they were talking about on the last episode about how most of what they did for years was musicians would call up and, you know, ask like the most rudimentary thing. And what they taught the most was how to copy and paste. Like yes. People would call up and ask for copies.
No. My absolute best IT story, and everybody has these. I'm sure Matt has these. My best story was the lady who I sent her a link to the proof for her brand new website that I just created. And she said she could not click the link in the email. Could I fax it to her?
What?
I've heard similar stories.
Cool. Well, why don't we get started, Matt? Why don't you? Matt, is it okay if I call you Matt, or are you pretty?
Yeah,
particular?
Call me Matt. Yeah.
Okay. Absolutely. Cool. Do you just like Matthew written in print too? Because we
Matthew
had,
is what my mother calls me, but that's I write under that name because someone told me Matt sounds like a 12-year-old boy. So, but you can call me Matt because I feel like a 12-year-old sometimes.
Yeah. Well, we had Matt Sturgis on a couple weeks ago, and he said that just call me Matt. Just I like the way Matthew looks on a cover. You know?
Yeah. But, exactly. Yeah.
Cool. Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about how you got started in writing and writing science fiction and how and kind of maybe sort of see if you can sort of lead that into the start of Sybil's Garage and how, you know, you got started with all of that. And because even though it's on number 7, it's been around for quite a few years already. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's been around 7 years. It's pretty much an annual thing, which is part of the reason why it sort of morphed into an anthology. I got started probably in similar ways that most people get started. I was an avid reader as a kid. My dad would just, he was a reader of science fiction, and he would always bring home these, like, Arthur C. Clarke, Larry Niven, all these books he got, that the library was often throwing away. He'd sometimes come home with a whole box of books, and I would just read through them. And I didn't realize until college that I was actually writing stories in my head. I would just walk around and have these entire stories written, these fantasy stories that I was just imagining up in my head, or science fiction plots. And then one day I just decided to start writing them down, and eventually a friend of mine convinced me to go take a class at the New School, and it was supposed to be taught by Terry Bisson, but he took a leave of absence and Alice Turner taught the class. Alice Turner, if you don't know, was the fiction editor for Playboy magazine for a while, and she edited a bunch of I believe she was Anne Rice's editor, if I'm not mistaken. Anyway, so that's when I really started getting serious about the writing. I took the class at the New School. And after the class was over, a couple people said in the class, hey, let's continue doing this. We really like this. So I formed a writer's group in Hoboken at the time. And that didn't last. It lasted about 2 years. It sort of was, people weren't that serious about it. And I eventually joined the writers group Altered Fluid, which I'm a member of presently. So it's been that was probably about 2002, 2003, I think. And as far as Sybil's Garage goes, I was in Altered Fluid, and one of the members and my friend Chris Dykeman would often bring in these zines like Lady Churchill's Rosebud Wristlet and Say and Electric Velocipede. And I was always really excited about these kind of homemade feel, sort of, I guess you call it punk feel of these zines. It just felt like, you know, anyone can do these things. Obviously, the three I mentioned were all very high quality, but I felt like, wow, you know, this is really like kind of gives me a sense of power. I wanted to do one. At the time, I was working in a print shop in Hoboken, and decided to spend my time when the boss wasn't looking, producing a magazine. The first issue was a vanity thing. I put my own story in it. I know you're not supposed to do that. I did it in the first issue. I made about 40 copies. Handed it out to a bunch of friends. You know, as a gaff kind of thing. And it really was a hit. Everyone really liked it. So the second time around, I said, you know what I'm going to do is I'm going to solicit stories. Instead of printing my friend's stuff, I'm actually going to read stories from other people. So I put an ad on Craigslist. I don't know why at the time I thought that was a good place to list a market. Somehow Raylan from Raylan.com got wind of this listing and said, hey, would you mind if I listed this on the Raylan site? And my first, I hesitated because I thought, wow, I'm going to be inundated, because I was hoping just to solicit from the New York area. And I was like, wow, I don't know if I can do this with just myself. Came to my writers group the next day and I said, hey, would you guys be interested in helping me read for the magazine? And about half the members said, yes, absolutely. You know, very excited. So that's when number two came out. And then number two was really the first issue that, was meant to be, I guess, introduced widely. But it wasn't really until issue three that we started to get a lot of attention. I had a lot of help early on from Gavin Grant, who you probably know is, he's a writer himself, but he also is the publisher, along with Kelly Link, of Small Beer Press. And so early on, I would go to the KGB readings in New York City, and Gavin was there, and I became friendly with him there and also at various conferences. And he was always willing to give me advice, where to go print, how to deal with contracts, all the business side of producing a magazine. And he helped me with was just simply providing space at a conference for Civil's Garage on the Small Beer Press table. So, like, you know, you have a collection of Kelly Link alongside Civil's Garage, it lends it a certain credibility, and people would pick it up and look at it. And I think that's when it really started to expand, and all of a sudden we'd see mentions of it in people's blogs and on the internet. And it really grew exponentially from that point. To the point that by the time we reached issue four, we were doing, you know, color covers and perfect binding and interview with Jeffrey Ford, et cetera. So it was really quite an adventure. It still is. But go ahead.
I was going to ask you, what would you sort of, if you were sort of pitching Civil's Garage to someone who might be interested in reading it, is there an overall theme, would you say, to the stories that generally appear in Civil's Garage? Is it a particular flavor of science fiction? Because it doesn't really look like it's, you know, space opera or anything. So how would you sort of describe it to someone who might be interested in checking it out?
Very broadly, it's a speculative fiction magazine that that publishes fiction, poetry, and has an emphasis on the aesthetics of the print magazine. As far as the content, in the past issues, we've tended towards what you might term slipstream stories, a sort of a spec fic / literary style. With the current issue, we've tried to reach out more broadly to attract, I guess, what you would call more traditionally plotted stories. So we wanted, you know, straightforward science fiction, fantasy, and horror. You'll find in Civil's Garage a mix of stories. There will be some stories that are, you know, a fairly standard science fiction story. When I say standard, I mean, you know, the plot structure we come to expect in say, a magazine like the magazine of fantasy and science fiction. And there are other stories that might be a little more slipstreamy that you might see in a magazine like Lady Churchill's. So we strive for diversity both in the type of stories that we publish and also in the authors and content. I mean, in our guidelines, we specifically ask for stories from non-traditional cultures and non-traditional authors, because we feel that they're underrepresented in mainstream science fiction and fantasy. So that's it in a nutshell. Mm-hmm. But it, I mean, I can go into specifics about particulars, but yeah.
Now, how do you? Well, first of all, you know what I'm curious about is there any? What's the significance of the name Sybil's Garage? Did that come from any place in particular, or?
Yeah, it has an interesting backstory to it. So there is a cave in Hoboken called Sybil's Cave, and there was a famous murder that took place near the cave. A woman named Mary Rogers was murdered there, and not the writer Mary Rogers, who's a friend of mine. This happened in the 19th century. And so what happened was it became very popular in the newspaper at the time, and Edgar Allan Poe was living, I believe, in Baltimore at the time, and was very interested in the story and wrote his own fictionalized version of the solution, because it was an unsolved murder mystery. And you probably read the story, The Mystery of Mary Roget. So it was based on an event that happened near Sybil's Cave in Hoboken. So it's a landmark in Hoboken today. And when I mentioned that I wanted to start a zine to my writers group, I was walking home with my friend Devin Poor, who's also in the group. We were trying to come up with names. And I said to him, I go, what about Sybil's Cave? And he goes, well, you know, this neighborhood's being, you know, really gentrified, built up. It's probably a garage by now. And then that's when the name Sybil's Garage came. So I think it has a nice ring to it, because, you know, you have the Sybils, like the ancient prophets, and you also have, you know, the multiple personality Sybil, and then it also has the history of the cave itself. So, you know, I think it has a nice ring to it. And a garage is, you know, a place of mystery, I think. We always store hidden, you know, things that we forget, and we come, oh, yeah, I remember that. You know, I think a garage is a nice nice metaphor.
Question for Kate. How did Neil Clark come up with the idea for Clark's World, the name?
You know, he's gotten a lot of questions about that, whether it's, you know, an homage to the Arthur C. Clarke, and it's not. It's just based on his last name. So, I mean, that's the first thing people ask me. They're like, oh, so it's like all Arthur C. Clarke stories. And I'm like, no, it's not. But Matt, I just wanted to say, you didn't go into the whole death thing with the cave on the radio. So, I mean, that gives you like all the warm and fuzzies.
Yeah, I, if that's your kind of thing. Yeah, you know, the radio, I guess he didn't ask. Jim really didn't go into the detail. We were on Jim Freund's Hour of the Wolf about 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, which airs at the ungodly hour of 5 a.m., and we talked about Sybil's Garage.
It's like a coast-to-coast kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's podcasted like you guys are, so you can listen to it anytime, but... the actual recording takes place at 5 a.m. because it's broadcast live. So.
Oh, geez. That's kind of rough.
That was real fun driving, too.
Yeah.
Is Sybil's Garage considered a professional credit?
It is not. We don't pay pro rates. Gotcha. I would love to pay pro rates, but it's an out-of-pocket thing, and it just the revenue model just doesn't support it right now. If I can pay pro rates in the future, I absolutely would.
Gotcha. Now, obviously, we've come a long way in the last 20 years. A lot of this kind of stuff is done online as far as, you know, people creating zines and different things. So it's kind of cool that you're still, you know, you're actually going to press and you're printing it up.
Well, I mean, from the very beginning, there's been a heavy focus on the aesthetics of the magazine. more so in the early issues. You know, I was doing this all. I do all the layout myself, and I would throw in a lot of engravings and artwork and marginalia, and you know, it less so in the current issue because I wanted it to be more of an anthology and have that feel so that people, you know, like bookstores would be more likely to carry it on the shelves and stuff like that.
Sure.
Yeah, it's but I mean, we also have electronic versions. I mean, I do have stories online that we do put three or four stories from every issue online, and we also have Kindle versions and EPUB with the latest release. So, you know, I'm not I want Sybils to be in as many as many media as possible, you know.
Understood. The very first thing I ever published, and this is going back a very long time, was in a fanzine that was actually pretty well put together. I was impressed with it, but it was the Helgard Social Register. And I challenged all of our Star Trekky fans to figure out what that means, because Helgard was part of Star Trek non-official canon. So I had a very early experience with kind of, you know, working with a zine kind of thing. And this was probably when this may have been pre-Word, now that I think about it, which is kind of scary. Let's
pre-Microsoft Word, or
I think it's
like spoken word.
No, it's pre-Microsoft Word.
Pre-verbal, yeah.
Pre-verbal, were you grunting the whole story? Yeah. Was that?
No, it's pre-Microsoft Word, so I forget what it was actually written in.
Wow. Well, why don't we talk a little bit, you know, because Kate has a story. And now, Kate, are we allowed to call you Kate, or do I have to call you Catherine E. Baker when you're on?
Oh, please. Chat? I would much prefer Kate when in casual conversation.
Okay. So Catherine E. Baker is going to be your you know, your name in when you're published, I'm guessing.
We actually ran into this before we put out the table of contents, and I had originally submitted the story under Kate, and I'm sure everybody knows that there, the late and fabulous Cage Baker. It was just too close of a name. I've been told that before, so we kind of survey, like, what should I be called as a published author, blah, 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 blah. So Catherine E. Baker just kind of came up, and I've used that ever since for at least the writing credentials. So.
Yeah, well, I think it looks good on the page too. I think I remember sort of voting on that on Twitter. With you. I think I said, yeah, Catherine E. Baker. Yeah, definitely.
And I think she's a singer Baker. Now too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
There's a couple of singers named Kate Baker, and the Kate Baker that we have on now is a singer as well, and we can maybe talk about that as well. Now, now Matt and Kate, how do you go about getting your stories, Matt? Do you just sort of put it out there, and then people, do you have like a big slush pile that you read through, or how do you pick the stories for Sybils Garage?
So I programmed since I'm an IT person by day, I programmed a submissions form so people upload their files to a website and it comes to us. We have for this issue, I had 6 slush readers helping me, and they're all members of Altered Fluid Writers Group, and they trying not to talk with my hands. It's very hard. I'm just gonna step back from my desk because. All right. So the stories come in, and it's essentially a round robin system. So we all get the same number of stories, and I have this whole back end content management system where we can see, you know, which editors responded the quickest, and you know, how many rejections they have, how many, you know, forwards they have. So if any of the slush readers like the story, if they feel it's good enough to pass on to me, they forward it to me, and then I'll read it. And each story has its own little comment section, kind of like a blog post, so that we can all discuss it. So for this issue, we received about little shy of 600 stories, I think. Wow. And probably about 100 poems. Well, that sounds like a lot of stories, but I think Clark's World magazine gets that in like a week or something, or like a month, you know. And so, yeah, so I that number is small compared to some of the bigger publications. But anyway.
Yeah, but if you sent me 600 stories to read, I would just go insane.
It's a lot of reading when during the reading period, it becomes very sort of, oh my God, if I don't read two stories a day, by the end of the week, I have 50 stories in my queue, you know? So, it's certainly takes a lot of discipline to read through it. But, so after, we have about a 3 month reading period, we selected a bunch of stories that we wanted to hold on to for further consideration. And then when the reading period closed, all the editors and myself would then discuss the stories, and of those I picked 18 based on their comments and et cetera, 18 that we wanted to publish. So it's a long process, it's a lot of work, but it's really rewarding because I think at the end we know that these are the best stories that we received out of the bunch, and you know, also fit our editorial vision as well.
So. Gotcha.
Cool. Now, how about now you have Hal Duncan in this issue. How did you go about getting his story?
You know, Hal just sent us a story, and we were really, really impressed with that because we didn't think we'd. I mean, actually, I've published Hal before in Paper Cities, but Hal, you know, Ekaterina Sedia edited that one, so she solicited a story from him. But no, Hal just sent us a story. And he, you know, he went through the queue like everybody else.
Hey, Kate, how did you become involved with Sybil's Garage? I mean, what prompted you to submit?
Rejections. I had gone with a couple of bigger magazines, and I was getting really frustrated. And we talked about this a little on the radio show as well, but. They were so close that the rejections came back. They were like, oh, the story is wonderful. It just doesn't have, you know, that the as much speculative element is what I got some of the emails back, or it's very well written, but it's not what we're looking for. They were like personal rejections. And I was kind of like freaking out a little bit. I'm like, I'm never going to place the story because it seems to be like in the middle of where everybody's looking. And then I saw somebody had posted on Twitter that it was the last day to submit for Sybil's Garage. And I was like, you know, this story might find a home there, because I read the submission requirements and it seemed like it would be a good fit. And I was figuring a rejection, but I think it was a couple weeks later I got the email that made me do Snoopy dances and jumping up and down and cartwheels and all that good stuff. So, yeah, it was a moment of disbelief and sheer joy.
The Snoopy dance is so much fun, isn't it?
It is.
I seem to remember Xander having to do the Snoopy dance for Willow on Buffy once.
Yeah, you missed it at ReaderCon, John. When Neil Clark actually, he purchased a copy of Sybil's Garage, which was sort of like in a preview stage at that point. Mm-hmm. And he brought it over and he's like, here it is. And I just kind of like flipped out and I was like dancing in the middle of the dealer's room. It was really funny.
I think I kind of walked in not too far after that.
And yeah. Kinda was I still glowing? Like
you were. Yeah. You looked really happy. Yeah. It was really good to see. No, but it was great. And I really enjoyed we talked about that. You Matt had a, I guess a release party for Sybil's Garage there. And it was really nice to see, It was an interesting experience because I haven't been to a lot of cons. I've been making a point to try to go now, and I've been to quite a few over the past year. And it's interesting being in a con setting because everybody's into the same thing that you don't normally talk to people in your normal everyday life about. Mm-hmm. But it's such a sort of college-type atmosphere. So it's like, you know, people sort of partying it up, but – very intellectually. And
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
Yeah,
intellectual so, partying. Yeah,
yeah.
We're not drinking Bud. We're drinking Sam Adams. No,
I was, and it was, and I just, it was cool because people just sort of, and Matt, I hope you don't mind that I'm talking about the inner workings of the party that you had. If you want, we can cut this out later. But you know, people were just sort of at the release party. People just stood up on the hotel bed and read their stories. And it was really cool to have these like really intellectual science fiction stories and everyone sort of hanging out, partying in this, you know, it got very loud in the rooms at points. And then it'd be like, all right, someone's gonna read their story. Dead silence for like a good long time, you know, cause 7-8 pages of story takes 10-15 minutes to get through.
It was kind of a captive audience. We kind of, you know, give everyone a bunch of beers, get them drunk, and then jump up on the bed. And, you know, you people don't really want to walk out on that. But, no, you're totally right about that. That was we just had a lot of fun doing that. I call those guerrilla readings. But, yeah, that was a good time. So like about 3/4 into the party, Mike Allen comes in and he's like, come up to our party upstairs. I'm like, okay, I'll sneak out for a few minutes. I go up there and then they did a one-act play up in his party. So you know, I mean, there's all sorts of cool stuff going on. I was like, wow, you know, where can you, you know, go to a party and have people do a one-act play for you, you know? And it was really well acted too, so.
What were you going to say, Kate?
I think I had too much to drink because I refused to get on the bed. I was afraid that I was going to fall on people.
Yeah,
it's like, no, I'll be standing on the floor. Thank you very much.
It would have added a nice dramatic touch, I think, to your story,
yes,
though. So
yes.
Maybe. But Kate, what now? So is this your first publication, Kate, or have you had any other stories published at this point?
This would be my first.
Oh, well, congratulations on
this occasion. Yes.
And what's sort of your? Do you have any other stories in the hopper? Are you kind of submitting to other places, or is there a Sybil's Garage 8 coming out anytime soon?
I believe there is, but Matt could better answer that question. And as for the stories, I'm working on a bunch of them. It's now that I've been published, I've got that first published blues type of thing where I'm like, oh my God, I'm not going to get published ever again. And I'm not going to write anything anymore because, you know, I've accomplished what I set out to do. But I'm slowly getting over that. And I started writing again, so, which is good.
See,
very good.
Kate, you have to have the attitude that I have. Anytime something good happens to me where I feel like I taste some sort of success, I just walk around my house and I quote Anchorman and I'm to my wife and I'm just like, I'm kind of a big deal. So just do that. It's fun. You know? just
John Scalzi knows my name.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. You know, I'm like, you know, I'm kind of a big deal now. But no, it's great. I'm really happy for you, Kate. And it's just a great Sybil's Garage is it's a great thing. And I really love what you're doing with this.
I'd like to make a prognostication here. And
okay.
I've seen a lot of stories come in the slush pile in 7 issues or 6 issues of reading slush. And I predict that you're going to go far with your writing, Kate. So keep it up. Don't stop.
Thank you.
Cool. Well,
hold on, John, before you do that, Kate, if you listen, if you read to, you know, all these things that talk about writing and I think everybody who wants to be an author or who aspires to be an author, we read all this crap.
Mm-hmm.
And there comes a point where you have to stop reading all that crap and just sit down and write.
Right.
I mean, that's you know, you talk to people who've been in this, you know, for 50 years or whatever, like Mike Resnick, or you talk to someone who is, you know, just kind of starting out and has a big success like Blake Charlton, they all say the same thing. You got to write.
Mm-hmm.
You just got to write. That's it. And
well,
and then you have to develop that thick skin. You have to
be able
to.
Do you hear the train?
A little bit.
I hear it now, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
But you have to be
able
to.
Need a little Johnny Cash right now, yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I'm
no,
just like,
fine.
Oh, I wonder if that's coming through.
You're totally right about that. Yeah, I mean, you have to put ass in chair. Can I say that word?
Yeah.
Oh, you can.
On the podcast again.
Yeah, I don't know what the laws are. You have to just put your ass in chair and do the work. And you know, sometimes it doesn't flow, and sometimes it does. And yeah, absolutely, thick skin really is important.
And Patrick mentioned Mike Resnick, and he's amazing because Mike is, I think he said he was 68. Is that how old? I think that was his age.
Something like that, yeah.
I mean, he still puts out like 5-6 books a year. Like, he just sits down every day and writes. And
every night, actually.
At 10 p.m. to 6 a.m.
Yep. We were at the Hugo, the Hugo breakfast. He came in and we started at 6 a.m. down in Atlanta at Dragon Con, and he was complaining that he had no sleep because that's his writing time is from 10 to 6.
Yep.
Yeah, he sort of had the Frank Zappa. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Frank Zappa and his work methods. He, I went through a big Zappa phase at one point, and he did the same thing where. And I think Resnick is sort of the same idea. Now it's a little different with the internet and email and everything. But Frank Zappa, I know, would do that where he would work from 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. because he's like, yeah, that's when people don't call.
Right.
Right. So,
there's no one to bother you.
Yeah. I mean, nowadays it's different because you can go and get distracted by your email and the internet. But I think Zappa had a home studio set up, and he just – yeah. He said he used to look at it like camping. It was like he would go camping every night. He's like, yeah, like I would make sure I had everything I need because everything would be closed, and like I'd order a pizza like at 9 o'clock and I'd have a pizza and I would sit there and I would do music. And I don't know how many albums Zappa had out. It's like 50 or 60 though. It's some incredible amount of music. So, you know, it's too bad that we all have to have day jobs where we have to sort of be awake during the day, because I would love to do that. I'm a teacher during the day, and having summers off, although I don't have summers off anymore because I teach summer school now because I have a child. Damn child making you work and stuff.
I know. Isn't that awful?
Yeah. For years, I didn't work at all in the summer, and I would eventually migrate to vampire hours where I was almost doing that. It was like I would stay up an hour later every week. By the time I got to August, I'd be going to bed at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning just because I'd be up all night getting stuff done. So,
well, and it's like when you were young and stupid. I mean, I remember being young and stupid, and my thing was always I would try to see how long I can stay up and still function.
It's how like, long yeah, did you stay up for about 3 days or something?
Oh, you stay up all night. You're out with friends. You're doing whatever. You come home, shower, go to work. Then after work, you go out again, you know, and it's like you just try to see how long you can go. And I think this was probably before Red Bull. But you know, when you're young and stupid, you do that kind of stuff.
I'm sorry to cut you off, Patrick. I wanted to get this in before I forgot. Matt, in Sybil's Garage, I noticed you have music references, like I guess what some of the stories were. Did you ask the writers going in to sort of – or is that something that's always in Sybil's Garage, or is that particular to number 7?
No, that's in every issue. We ask the writers to suggest a song or album to accompany their story, something that – either influence the story or they think would go along with the story.
Yeah, I thought that was awesome. I mean, because I think a lot of people, I listen to music while I read all the time, and so certain albums will sort of go along with certain books for myself. So I thought that was really cool that you sort of have that listed above every story. So I think that adds a nice touch to the collection.
We actually created a playlist. If you go to the website, census5.com, and go back and click on the Sybil's Garage posts. It was about 2-3 weeks ago I created a playlist on iTunes, so you can go there and you can see all the songs listed, and if you want, buy them. I mean, not every song was available on iTunes. A lot of people picked really obscure tracks, but about, you know,
or something by the Beatles.
Yeah, you can't get that.
No. What? Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
Sir Paul says it's Yoko's fault, of course.
Yeah. No, but I thought that's a great touch, and I am seeing a little more of that these days, and obviously that's a particular interest of mine, but I like seeing that where authors are sort of putting up what they listen to. I talked to John DiNardo over at SF Signal, maybe trying to do a little feature like that for him, because I was writing something for SF Signal, and then I haven't been, and DiNardo was kind of giving me crap about that on the SF Signal podcast. So I have another idea of maybe doing something where authors sort of list what they listen to while they're writing, and I thought that was like a really cool touch, because I think, you know, if you're into literature, if you're into reading, I think a lot of times you're into music too. You know, if you sort of have that artistic head about you, you know, you like music, and the two can go together. So I always like to see when there's synergy between the two.
I mean, for
I
me,
read the soundtracks.
I,
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, Matt.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I was just going to say, like, for me, music has it tells a story, not to sound cheesy, but I like sometimes when I listen to like epic songs, I get a vision in my head in the same way that I get from reading a really good novel.
Hey,
Kate, have you written your crappy novel yet? You know how everybody writes like their crappy novel just to write a novel to get it out of the way?
No.
I have. I did it over a weekend. No, I actually did it over a weekend. Like a 3-day weekend.
Really?
I just locked myself.
Was this one of the weekends where you didn't sleep?
I did not sleep much. I survived on Mountain Dew and coffee and whatever I could get delivered to the apartment. Which I think there was like this was in Knoxville, Tennessee. So I think there was like a hibachi place that actually produced some pretty good food, and I had them deliver a lot. But I wrote the really, really crappy first novel that's, you know, he's just like, can I write a novel? Sure, let's try. Anyway, this was like when Harry Connick Jr. was doing his big band kind of stuff. So the entire novel was written to Harry Connick Jr.
And it was epic fantasy, right?
And it was terrible.
Yeah, but it's funny to think of like Harry Connick Jr. sort of scoring epic fantasy, you know?
But I did it.
Yeah.
All right. So is it time to pimp stuff, John?
I think it's about time to pimp stuff. So, Matt, well, we obviously talked a lot about Sybil's Garage. Is there anything else you want people to know about?
Well, I would love for people to check out the podcast that of my story that Kate Baker read. It's at Clark's World Magazine. Is it clarksworldmagazine.com? And it's in the March issue.
Who's that Kate Baker girl?
Yeah, who is that? It's wonderful, her reading of it. So check that out. Also, if you're interested in Sybil's Garage, you can find us at census5.com. That's SENSESFIVE.com. And you can also get Sybil's Garage number 7 on Amazon.
Isn't it on sale?
Well, we just lowered the price of the Kindle from $9.99 to $5.99 of the Kindle book. And the EPUB, I think, is $4.99, if I'm remembering that properly. The ebooks are basically half the price of the print copy. And my own personal website is matthewcressel.net. And it has links there to various stories I've written. And like I said, I have one coming out, Beneath Ceaseless Skies, in the next couple of months. And there's also an anthology of Jewish-themed science fiction and fantasy coming out by Prime Books.
That's interesting.
It's called The People of the Book, edited by Rachel Swirsky and Sean Wallace.
That's very cool.
Very cool.
Yeah. So that's my story.
Great. Now, Matt, before we get to Kate, are you going to be going to any upcoming conventions at all?
I'll be at World Fantasy.
Cool.
So that's the only one I have in the pipeline for right now. But I'll be there.
Is there going to be any secret parties at World Fantasy, or do we need to keep those secret?
I was talking with an editor of another magazine, possibly about doing a dual party, but there hasn't been anything definite yet. So
cool. Well, Patrick and I are going to be at World Fantasy, so we'll definitely have to hang out and at least get a drink together or something like that, and maybe even interview you for we're also doing the SF Signal podcast. Maybe you can come and give us like 10 minutes for SF Signal over there. So
I'd love to.
Cool. Kate, what do you have going on?
Before you say anything, Kate, I want to read this real quick. This is from Kate's website. Kate Baker's reading of the story is impressive. Aside from all the sound effects, Baker draws out the emotion from the protagonist, whether it's genuinely moaning in pain to sharing her frustration with her husband. That's awesome. And I had to do the special voice to read that.
Yes.
The NPR voice.
Yeah. That's good. You got a future in that, Patrick. I really do.
I actually did. At one point, we had a voiceover IP telephone system, and I wanted to like record all of the button stuff. You know, it's like, thank you for calling. Press 1 for this. I've totally done that. Anyway, Kate, why don't you pimp yourself and tell us all about where to find you?
Okay, so website is katebaker.net, and there you will find a plethora of different things. I've got the link up to Sybil's Garage. I've got, let's see, music, which I've composed and sang. And
it's really good.
Thank you.
Yeah, it is. You should all go check it out.
And then there's a PDF of a story that I had written but haven't submitted anywhere because it was sort of like a fan fiction of a friend. So, but I really loved where the story took me, and he allowed me to publish it up there. So you should go read that. It's pretty awesome, if I may say so myself. And as usual, twice a month, Clark's World Magazine. It's Clark's World with an E, magazine.com.
And awesome. Twitter, are you guys both on Twitter?
Oh, yes. Kate _ Baker.
Matt?
Matt Kressel, MattKressel.
Very cool. John?
You can, like I said, you can download a lot of my music as a pay what you want, even free, at johnanilio.bandcamp.com. You could follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/johnanilio. And this week, and I've kind of known about this for a while, and it was like really fun to have this come out, but as was sort of in our community, I think this was kind of a big news this week, was the launch of Clash of the Geeks, which was John Scalzi and Will Wheaton's little short story ebook. They're calling it a chapbook. And they had the painting of Will Wheaton on a unicorn Pegasus kitten attacking orc John Scalzi. And they both wrote stories. And I should say before anything else, this is all a benefit for the Lupus Alliance of America, I believe is the name of the organization. And it's their two short stories. It's also short stories by Patrick Rothfuss and who are some of the Catherine Valent and a couple of other people too as well. And they ran a fan fiction contest where, and Rachel Swirsky, I think Matt mentioned her, she entered the fanfic, and Scalzi was like, "You're not entering the fanfic." And then she just like, you know, took her out of the fanfic and just published it. So there's a lot of really cool things in there. And I had written the Unicorn Pegasus Kitten song, and I put it up on my blog, and Scalzi, you know, noticed it and really liked it and sort of linked to the MP3. And I wrote it out in sheet music because I can do that. So I wrote it out in sheet music, and I sent it to Scalzi months ago. And I said, like, "Hey, if you want to include this, I think it would be kind of cool. It can add something." It took him a long time. He got back to me right away, but he, he didn't want to. He wasn't sure if it was going to fit. So I was waiting months to find out if it was going to fit or not. And then he finally was like, "Yeah, we're going to fit it in. We're going to put it in." So anyway, the sheet music to my Unicorn Pegasus Kitten song is in the Clash of the Geeks. So I was real awesome. Pleased about that. Yeah, thanks. It's kind of neat. So I could sort of say I'm published alongside John Scalzi and Will Wheaton and Patrick Rothfuss. And so it's really, really cool. I was really pleased with that this week. So go and get that, because you can just get it for free if you go, I think it's unicornpegasuskitten.com. Anyway,
it
you
is.
Just,
yep.
Yeah. And you can get the chapbook that way. You can get it for free, but it's strongly suggested that you do at least a $5 donation, which goes right to the Lupus charity. And so get that. And then you can get my MP3 of that song free if you go to scifisongs.blogspot.com. You can get it for free there. So go and check all that out.
And get the rest of his stuff. It's on iTunes. You can get it there.
Cool. Thanks, Kate. Patrick, yeah, I know you have some pretty cool news this week. Why don't you tell us about that?
Well, capitalizing on the sad fact that I have no life, when Mer Lafferty put out that she was looking for a producer for her I Should Be Writing podcast, I replied. And she said, "Cool," and started sending me files. And so starting with number 154, which is a feedback show, I have been producing I Should Be Writing for Mer Lafferty. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, that's cool. Super, yeah. Cool, man.
And then, of course, we have the SF Signal podcast going. That's always kind of cool. Oh, and John, in episode number 155 of I Should Be Writing, you are mentioned. Of course, you have to wait to hear that.
Oh, all right.
I get to hear it before you, so there.
Okay, well, I'm very curious about that now.
And, of course, I've got the blog going, atfmb.com. That is all things from my brain, and that's because I can't stay on any one topic for too long of a time. Don't have anything up on SF Signal or Grasping for the Wind right now except the stuff that I already wrote. Twitter.com/ATFMB, Facebook.com/ATFMB. These are all the places you can find me. Hey, that rhymed.
Yes.
Scott Seeley, still doing the daily, mostly functional nerd news roundups, which we appreciate. Thank you, Scott. He also wrote that kind of, he and his wife wrote that cool Dragon Con recap for us, which I thought was kind of awesome. And I think that's pretty much it. Who do we have on next week? Do we know yet?
Yeah, we have James Eng.
Ooh, very cool.
Yeah. So he has the, and he's nominated for, what are the awards that are given out at World Fantasy? I can't even remember the name of them right now.
World Fantasy Awards?
Oh, duh. Well, I gotta make myself look more like a moron. World Fantasy, the awards are... Anyway, his Blood of Ambrose is nominated for Best Novel, so we're having him on the show next week, and I'm looking forward to that. I'm about halfway through Blood of Ambrose right now. So
it's an excellent book.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it so far. So we're having James Eng on next week. So join us next time.
Very cool. And I got Brent Weeks on SF Signal, I think, this week. So that'll be kind of cool.
Sweet.
And I got an email from someone whose name I can't pronounce. Paolo...
Bacigalupi.
Bacigalupi.
Yeah, I don't think that's right.
It is.
It's Bacigalupi.
Yeah. I sent him an email like 2 months ago. Hey, come on the SF Signal podcast. And he finally replied today. So I thought that was kind of cool.
Cool.
All right. We better get going here. Thanks, guys, for coming on. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah.
This will be live on Friday. So check it out.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Till 7:30, and I'm lured by this family. We sail down the parkway, knock at exit 98. We feel the sunset, a pink and orange glow. We taste the salmon from the ocean's flow. We stroll down the boardwalk, and old wood creaks beneath our feet. Flashing lights around us, trade winds blowing from the east. Your air is heavy with humidity. Arcades are beeping like a symphony. The Ferris wheel spins tonight. The carousel rings like chimes. The waves are crashing. Summer ends. We take our shoes and socks off, our bare feet tread across the beach. The ground's a sandy mattress, the sky's a starry canopy. Someone's freezing, but her arms are warm. Night wind singing like a troubadour. Ferris wheel spins tonight. The carousel rings like chimes. The waves are crashing in lament as summer ends. Ferris wheel spins tonight. summer ends. A 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 summer ends.